From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, February 3rd, 2021.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners and by the Maine law firm of Eaton Peabody, serving generations of Maine families and businesses from offices in Augusta, Bangor, Brunswick, Ellsworth, and Portland.
More than 40,000 cases of COVID-19 have been identified now in Maine since the pandemic began. That includes 273 announced today by the Maine CDC, and an additional 9 deaths have also been reported. More than 80% of Maine nursing home residents, but only about half of staff, have received at least one dose of COVID-19 vaccine. That's according to the U.S. CDC. Officials say they are pausing full COVID-19 testing at the University of Southern Maine and the University of Maine at Orono until next week after technical errors led to long wait times earlier this week. University of Maine System Chancellor Daniel Malloy says that on Monday the system launched its partnership with testing provider Shield M3 but ran into several issues, including a QR code scanning error that affected almost 700 tests. Malloy says the system has bought new barcodes and added processes to fix the system.
And we will change the system to have a reading that is 98% accurate as opposed to 76% accurate.
In the meantime, testing at UMaine and USM is scheduled to resume by next Monday. The university system has dramatically increased testing for the spring semester and plans to test all on-campus students and staff on a weekly basis. A ruling on Portland's $18 an hour minimum wage during declared emergencies being appealed from both sides. Superior Court Justice Thomas Warren ruled that the wage increase is legal, but said it doesn't go into effect until next year. Attorneys representing Portland frontline workers are appealing the ruling and say it should go into effect sooner so employees can receive hazard pay during the pandemic. The Portland Regional Chamber of Commerce is also appealing. It's challenging the minimum wage provision's validity under the state constitution and the Portland City Code. The chamber, along with several local businesses, originally filed suit to invalidate the new minimum wage, which voters passed into law in November. Checking in on the weather tonight, we'll have snow showers mostly ending, except in the far north and far south. Overcast skies with lows in the high teens to high 20s. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy east with isolated flurries, otherwise a mix of sun and clouds with highs in the mid-20s to the high 30s. Friday, sunny east in the morning, otherwise overcast with some afternoon snow or rain, several inches of snow inland overnight with highs in the mid-20s to high 30s. And Saturday, partly to mostly cloudy with a few flurries north in mountains, windy statewide Saturday with highs in the mid-20s to the mid-30s. The high-volume COVID-19 vaccination clinic at the former Scarborough Downs Harness Racing Track is now open. The clinic, run by Maine Health, has the capacity to vaccinate 2,000 people a day, but the state's limited supply of doses will initially cap those numbers at around 400. Patty White has more.
The space was donated by developer Crossroads Holdings. In just 15 days, the former racetrack's grandstand was retrofitted with clinical stations that will ultimately see thousands flow through for the COVID-19 vaccine. But on the first official opening day, a little more than 100 people were scheduled to get a shot, including 73-year-old Robin Goshorn.
This is my first trip to the racetrack.
Goshorn and his 79-year-old wife Alice got the vaccine Wednesday morning during an event for the media. On their way to the clinic, Alice says the couple thought about their new grandson, who was born last spring in Chicago.
We are just very eager is not the word. I mean, it doesn't even describe how anxious we are to, to be able to see him and maybe celebrate his first birthday.
Maine's commissioner of the Department of Health and Human Services, Jean Lambrew, says the high-volume clinic moves the state forward in ramping up its vaccination effort.
They can go quicker and bigger to use every vaccine we get unexpectedly within a week's time, because our goal is, as soon as we get that vaccine, to turn around and get it into people's arms.
In its first weeks, the Scarborough Clinic will vaccinate between 400 and 500 people each weekday. That could expand to weekend hours and as many as 2,000 people a day. But Maine Health CEO Bill Caron says they're constrained by available doses.
Believe me, if we get enough vaccine, we're going to ask the question, how do we get to 12 hours on Saturday? How do we get to 12 hours on Sunday? This is a long road here.
Demand is far outstripping supply, says Karen. The clinic is expected to be open for at least the next 6 months, and the wait list for the vaccine is long.
As we stand here today, we have 60,000 people over age 70 on a list. We know who they are, and as soon as we get vaccine and we can schedule them, we will reach out to them and get them in one of our clinics.
A high-volume clinic also opened at the Cross Insurance Center in Bangor this week, run by Northern Light Health. Officials say it also has the capacity to vaccinate 2,000 people a day, but the available supply of doses limits the facility to about 2,000 a week. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
The Southern Poverty Law Center's come out with its annual census of active hate groups around the country with a count of 838. These are groups that have taken some type of action on behalf of their racist or extremist beliefs in the previous year. As Susan Sharon reports, three of them are in Maine.
The three groups identified by the SPLC are known as the Colchester Collection, described by The Atlantic as an online reading room by and for white nationalists. New Albion, a white ethno-state plan advocated by former Jackmantown manager Thomas Kaczynski, who now lives in Greenville and hosts a popular coronavirus podcast. And a white nationalist group that bills itself as the Patriot Front.
And the Patriot Group is probably, you know, one of the bigger, better known groups. They were formed in the aftermath of the deadly 2017 Unite the Right rally.
That rally in Charlottesville, Virginia, killed one person and injured nearly 20 others. Susan Cork, director of the Intelligence Project for the SPLC, says Patriot Front followers pride themselves on activism and often use racist flyers as their calling cards to create fear.
It's an openly fascist group and has a very kind of violent belief set that it believes America needs to undergo a cathartic rebirth to bring power to the country's founding stock. And by that they mean white Europeans.
Cork says part of the group's strategy is to make its propaganda and ideology appear as pervasive as possible. The number of hate groups tracked this year is actually down from 2019 and from a record number the year before. But Cork says the level of hate is obviously up, fueled, she says, in part through social media and coalescing around the pandemic and anti-masking movement, as well as the election that President Donald Trump repeatedly and falsely declared was stolen from him. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Susan Sharon.
And the Maine legislature could soon join those in about half a dozen states that allow lawmakers to request racial impact statements on certain bills. The Maine proposal spearheaded by Assistant House Leader Representative Rachel Talbot Ross, who says analyzing a bill's potential
news,
impact
you can
on
find
people
more
of color is online at
mainepublic.org.
Racial outcomes
Maine calling
laws,
us tomorrow morning
while also
at 11.
Institutionalizing those considerations in future legislation. Steve Missler has our story.
Talbot Ross, a Democrat, presented her bill to the legislature's State and Local Government Committee Wednesday and acknowledged that it won't single-handedly tear down structural racial inequities, nor prevent all of them in the future.
But we can make a commitment to making our systems a little fairer at every decision point.
By systems, Talbot Ross is referring to laws and rules that, intentionally or not, have exacerbated racial inequities that have plagued domestic policy in the United States since the abolishment of slavery, whether it's crime laws that have led to the disproportionate jailing of black people or public health policies that have exposed more people of color to the risk of contracting COVID-19. Supporters of Talbot Ross's bill, like Portland attorney Crystal Williams, say it's time for state lawmakers to examine new legislation through the lens of race.
Race-neutral legislation, no matter how well-intentioned, can and does produce disparate outcomes.
Talbot Ross's bill would, in a limited way, effectively force state lawmakers to consider the racial impact of the bills they review. It would allow some legislative committees to request an analysis from nonpartisan staff to review how a potential law might affect people of color. The measure starts small. Legislative leaders would this year study what criteria or metrics might be used to analyze a bill's racial impacts. The leaders would then pick four legislative committees to test the use of those measurements, beginning in the second session that starts next year. Talbot Ross says many committees already have access to racial impact data. It's just not formally used when considering bills.
We do know what health outcomes have produced. We do know wage gaps. We do know wealth gaps. We do know housing gaps. We do know education gaps. We have data. currently not being utilized in our legislative process.
And she says her bill would not force state agencies to compile racial data that it doesn't have, although it might inspire those agencies to begin collecting it. Racial impact statements could be used in much the same way as fiscal notes on bills that cost money. Anthony Jackson, a young Black man and activist from Brewer, says it's time lawmakers evaluate bills with the cost of racial disparity in mind.
The same sense of urgency, diligence, and scrutiny that is put into the financial security of the state needs to be applied to the security of our people when implementing policies.
The proposal drew support from racial equity and immigrant advocacy groups during the public hearing. It was also supported by officials from Maine's Indian Nations, including Representative Rena Newell, who represents a Passamaquoddy tribe sometimes at odds with state laws that it views as environmentally harmful or detrimental to sustenance fishing rights.
The historical record shows that the Maine government has a long, dark history of enacting laws without regard to the cost of such policies on the communities that I stand to represent.
Racial impact statements have been adopted by roughly seven states, according to the National Conference of State Legislatures. They are relatively new, and their efficacy is still unclear. Iowa was the first state to pass one in 2015, and one study found racial impact statements had a neutral impact on disparate incarceration rates. 2 years after former New Jersey Governor Chris Christie signed a similar law, only one bill out of that state's legislature has generated an impact statement. But Talbot Ross cautioned against viewing her bill as one that would only benefit people of color, an assessment echoed by civil rights attorney Mary Bonato.
Because our communities can only be stronger when we are all stronger.
Nobody who testified during the public hearing opposed the bill, which will now be evaluated by the State and Local Government Committee. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Steve Missler.
And that's today's Maine News. You can join us tomorrow morning at 11 for Maine Calling and find more stories online at mainepublic.org. I'm Nora Flaherty.